On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we react to the 96th Midsummer Classic in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The game itself, not particularly compelling. The pitching was just too good. But we talk about Cody Bellinger MVP, Miguel Vargas' home run, and of course the Sandlot tribute and the fireworks that all of us will remember for a long time. We also look ahead to the second half, talk about what Bruce Meyer and Rob Manfred said about the ongoing CBA negotiations. And we speculate, how good are the Boston Red Sox? They won how many games in a row before the break? All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks those Sandlot kids should be careful. It's dark out there. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And last night at the All-Star game, we had quite the performance, not by the National League hitters.
The fireworks were limited to that beautiful Sandlot tribute and Miguel Vargas, not the MVP, but certainly the hitter I will remember from this 96th Midsummer Classic on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast. I remain in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Jake Mintz woke up very early to take a train back home to D.C., so he is back in his respective abode. We have a lot to get to, not a lot of offense, but we do have a lot to get to recapping the All-Star game, and that is our opener.
This game stunk, brother.
Yep. We have
all right.
Not
thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our producer. Look, man, we are incredibly fortunate. We have been at the last 10 All-Star games. I was thinking the only baseball podcast in the world to have been at the last 10 All-Star games, almost certainly.
We weren't a podcast at all 10 of those. We should clarify. We were not active podcasters. But
we were in essence.
Every one of those All-Star
we
games.
We were in essence. And I think the All-Star game itself is one of our lesser favorites of the All-Star Week experience because you are so beholden to the random chance of any given baseball game. And a baseball game can sometimes be a dud. And that is unfortunately what we had last night. We're going to talk about the theatrics of it, the mid-game Sandlot fireworks, the America, waterfall that we were provided with. We'll talk about that after the break, but we will focus on the game to start. There was some energy coming into it because Christopher Sanchez, Philadelphia Phillies left-hander, last year's Cy Young runner-up, started the game on the mound in front of the hometown crowd. He proceeded to have one of the worst starts in All-Star history.
But the funniest part is that how did it begin? With a strikeout of Mike Trout. That changeup was dancing. It was like, okay, Christopher Sanchez. You know, Mike Trout, welcome back to the All-Star game. Here's Christopher Sanchez. You didn't have to deal with him last time you were here. And
back
that,
in the day,
gave it a nice,
Mike Trout, when you were kicking butt in the All-Star game back in, the 20th century, guys were throwing 92, okay?
Hey,
different game. The game's changed.
You know what? Let's actually just do Trout here because we're not going to talk about him really again for the rest of this podcast. Trout gets three at-bats. He goes 0-for-3. Disappointing considering he has historically been incredible in All-Star games, which is a silly sentence because most people do not accrue enough playing time in All-Star games to really have any sort of sample to be judged upon. But Mike Trout, this was his 8th time participating, his 12th time being invited, now up to 23 career plate appearances in the All-Star game. But the fact that he hasn't played in the game since 2019 also stood out to me because he was invited from, I think it was 21, 22, 23, but was not available because he has been hurt so much. If you go back to 2019, there are only 5 players who were in that game, or I think were even named to that game. I'm not even sure if it was participated, that we're still here this time. So
Foster Griffin. I think
that's Foster Griffin. Tristan everyone Peters. Remembers he. Yep. Tristan Peters was, I mean.
Who Junior Caminero was 11 years old.
Wilson Contreras, Cody Bellinger. We'll talk about him. MVP later. Freddie Freeman. Justin Verlander, which doesn't really count because he's only here because he's, you know, we're saying goodbye. Aroldis Chapman and manager Dave Roberts. But other than that, you know, 2019 was a long time ago. And that relates to Bellinger too, which we can talk about later. But Mike Trout, it was still, that said, I did just want to pause on Mike Trout because in a week filled with boos, that is who everybody was booing. Everybody was booing everybody that was not a Philly all the time, unless you were Mike Trout or Kevin McGonigal.
Or Kevin McGonigal.
Yeah, and Mike Trout or Nick Kurtz. But for the most part, it was still, I still appreciate it and will remember Mike Trout was there. And even if he didn't do anything in the game, I'm glad he was there.
Who also didn't do anything in the game? Christopher Sanchez. 34 pitch, first inning.
Did a lot of pitching.
Allows RBI singles to Cody Bellinger and Ben Rice. Allows three in the frame. It was a lot of pitches. As far as I could tell, it was the third most pitches ever thrown in a single inning in an All-Star game ever. Roger Clemens and Justin Verlander both threw 35 at some point. Verlander had probably the most recent horrible start. He allowed 5 earned runs in Kansas City, I think it was, back in 2012, 2014. Sanchez was just bad. He was walked two guys. He, you know, threw a couple down the middle, and Bellinger and Ben Rice took advantage. It was weird. I think if he had allowed one more base runner, they would have had to come get him. It was very thankful that that's not what happened, that he was able to walk off the mound under his own emotional power and not endure, you know, the humiliation, embarrassment of not finishing the inning in his home All-Star game. It's interesting, right? Because it doesn't actually matter. Like, I'm not more worried about Christopher Sanchez the rest of the year because he had a bad inning in the All-Star game. But it is like a sort of a bummer that you don't get the big moment. He did get a nice applause as he made his way off the mound. Did you like the runs that were scored? Bad news. Those were the last runs until the eighth inning. No more offense for a while.
I know we had a lot of great pitchers replaced, but these guys are still pretty good.
These guys were good.
And I think this game really settled into a now, again, it's like, to me, the All-Star game, because we do the whole weekend, it's kind of just like this slow, like, all right, let's ease into the break, the brief break, by watching all these best players just kind of cycle through the game. That's basically what this was. But in this case, it was the pitchers just slicing and dicing every inning, which brings us to, I mean, they all just, almost all of them were nearly flawless, even on both sides. I mean, even the NL pitchers were quite good. However, in the top of the third gives us our next memorable moment. And it was not a good one, as Cardinals closer Riley O'Brien hits Junior Caminero with a pitch, 98 up and in, hits him on the left hand, kind of the left pinky at his bottom hand holding the bat. Caminero goes down very dramatically in a tribute to the World Cup, which is now coming to an end. And
when Caminero went down, he didn't really move. And if you didn't see it, you're like, did he get in the head? That's the opposite of the World Cup, where you get hit and you just roll around like 85 times, like back and forth. That would have been better as a real tribute. Caminero like sprints off the field after he gets up, down the tunnel, gets x-rays. X-rays are negative, which means it's positive. Negative for an injury, positive for the energy. He's fine. He'll play on Friday. It's just a reminder that, like, this is a real baseball game and people get hurt in real baseball games. And one of the players we thought could fill the stardom void in this game was out. And in came Miguel Vargas. More on him later. I want to fast forward now. We have a challenge in there on a bang bang play. New CBA, no challenging in the All-Star game. Have some feel. It was also like a long challenge. We don't need to get it right. Who cares about the truth? Bottom five, Ernie Clement makes a sweet. The answer to who cares about the truth is people gambling on the All-Star game. I could see that response in your eyes. Bottom five, Ernie Clement makes a beautiful play.
Hold on.
What?
Hold on. That's what you thought I was reacting to? I was not. I'm sorry. Gambling is basically never on my mind. No, I was mostly agreeing with you that I was going to make a joke about how I appreciated it because it was more screen time for Alan Porter, you know, my favorite umpire who was the crew chief in this. He's a Philly guy, or at least a Eastern Pennsylvania guy. And I am a big Alan Porter guy. So he stepped it up. But
okay. So yeah, you're not the only Alan Porter stan, because fast forward, when Bryce Harper came to the plate and was mic'd up in the sixth inning, you heard him go up and say, "Hey, Alan, congratulations. Happy for you." Like, to have out, like, so you and Bryce, Jordan Schuster and Bryce Harper thinking about Alan Porter at the All-Star game. Rewind, fifth inning, Ernie Clement, beautiful play up the middle, jump throw, got some real height on it. Nails Andy Pages at first with a defensive gem. The beautiful irony, of course, Ernie Clement robbing Andy Pages of a hit after Andy Pages robbed Ernie Clement and the nation of Canada of a World Series with a phenomenal defensive play in extra innings, ninth inning of Game 7 of the World Series. Ernie afterwards, when asked, was like, "Yeah, you know, I had to get him back."
Yeah, it's too bad that that Kike wasn't just standing there to be trucked by Ernie Clement as he made this play. That really would have completed the
symbolism,
you know, the revenge. But Ernie able to laugh about it. Obviously, him starting in this game and being able to participate is just like watching, moving around over these last couple of days, wherever we were, and there was Ernie. It just made me smile because this guy's awesome, and I'm glad he got this opportunity. And it was cool that he had one of the few plays I will remember from this game, for sure.
When people ask, like, "Hey, which big leaguers are like actually cool dudes?" Ernie Clement. Like, Ernie Clement is the perfect answer to that very reasonable question. Bottom of the sixth, Bryce Harper strikes out against Cade Smith while he's mic'd up, challenges a pitch that's in the strike zone just for the bit of it. Bryce Harper, put this one in the good feel category. All-Star games are like the perfect thing for him because he's relaxed. He's not like worried about his legacy, and yet he's still hyper aware about how he's perceived, and he's able to like be entertaining and charismatic. And I thought that came across on the broadcast when he was mic'd up yesterday. Swings over his splitter and just goes, "Sorry guys, that was disgusting." And then just heads back to the dugout. Then, the Dodgers have Justin Wroblewski come in, one of the more improbable all-stars, strikes out the side, comes back out for the eighth inning, allows the home run to Miguel Vargas, which for you, Jordan, is the offensive moment that you'll remember.
100%. I think that we could talk about whether he deserved MVP later when we talk about Bellinger, but when we looked at these rosters and we were thinking about All-Star Game MVP and the narratives and the journeys that these guys take to get here, Miguel Vargas is one of the best stories in the game. And there's different categories of – there's different genres of great stories, right? There's the unheralded guy who came out of nowhere. And there's a number of those, certainly on the pitching staff. And even the guy he homered off of is a great story, and Justin Wroblewski and Cade Smith, of course, the kind of an undrafted guy from Vancouver, you know, to goes to Hawaii, you know, like there are all these great stories. Miguel Vargas was a real prospect for sure when he signed out of Cuba with the Dodgers. But when you just think about his last 2 years and you think about that image, and I put it out there, and I think maybe it's a bit of a one that if you got to be a real sicko to remember, but for those who don't know how he ended up on the White Sox 2 years ago, he has been a Dodgers prospect. He made his debut with the Dodgers, but it was very clear that he was in that bucket of player that was not going to be a part of their long-term plans. And so they shuffle him over to Chicago in that weird three-way Tommy Edman trade with the Cardinals. And he arrives in the middle of their 21 game losing streak in 2024. And at the very end of that losing streak, there is a now famous shot for the baseball, the people who are way too online, of Miguel Vargas after that 21st loss, sitting at the edge of the Oakland Coliseum dugout after they lost to the A's, just kind of staring into nothingness. He was struggling. He was not having a good season. The White Sox were kind of buying low on him as a prospect. And you just looked at him and you'd be like, oh my God, like this dude was on the Dodgers as suddenly he was on the worst team in the history of baseball, or at least on the short list. He continues to not do awesome. Last year, he's fine. Like last year, he plays a lot. He's okay. But the White Sox are not. They're still terrible. It doesn't seem like he's about to be having a great time anytime soon. And then this year, my God, he's one of the most impressive and convincing breakouts that we have in the league, right? There's some guys that have had good first halves, and you look at the underlying numbers and you're like, all right, well, he's had a good first half. Maybe he's at the All-Star game. Good for him. Happy for him. I mean, you look at what Miguel Vargas is doing. This dude's just one of the best right-handed hitters in the American League now. And for him to then come to the All-Star game, come in under weird circumstances because Junior Caminero gets hurt. I mean, he was going to come in at some point anyway, but then to hit a home run, the farthest homer of his career, 433 feet, looked a lot like the home runs we saw during the Home Run Derby, off a Dodger, off Justin Robleski, off a Dodger, the team that traded him away, with Andy Pais, someone who he a fellow Cuban who he grew up, you know, with kind of in the Dodgers system. So many awesome things about the Vargas journey and the Vargas swing. And I know he didn't get MVP, but I'll remember that for a long time. I was so excited for that guy. I've never talked to him. I don't know him at all. But it was so cool.
He's a delight. That's the other thing. Talking to Kyle Williamson, who now covers the Nats for the Baltimore Banner, who used to cover the White Sox in Chicago. We were down in the tunnel waiting to talk to Foster Griffin when Vargas homered, and it was like on the TV. Like I wasn't actually in the stands for that or in the press box. And Kyle, who spent a lot of time around Miguel Vargas on some bad White Sox teams, was like, man, I'm happy for that guy. Like that is a good dude. He earned it. And you're right. Like the picture of him crying, despondent, was the emblem of that awful White Sox disaster. And for him to not be remembered for that, right? Like there is a world where he's just like fizzles out and like he's nothing. And we're just, oh, remember that picture of him in that moment in time? No. Now Miguel Vargas is much, much more than that moment. And that is very cool. Finishing out the game beats here. Mason Miller comes in, strikes out Murakami, faces one batter. He's just a one out guy, Mason Miller. I guess we don't have batter minimums in the All-Star game now that I'm thinking about it. That's funny.
I guess we don't.
John Duran gets like a disjointed hype entrance.
Yeah. So one of the things that Philly fans in theory, I mean, really any fan that was going to be in the building would be looking forward to is Duran in his first All-Star game coming into his super hype, you know, flame filled, spider filled intro. However, because he entered in the middle of an inning, which I mean, he's definitely done before, but it seemed like ballpark ops was not totally like in position. So he starts running in. They have like the visual elements, but the music doesn't start until he's like almost at the mound. And by then, and at this point too, you know, the NL is losing. It's not like he's coming in like a high stakes situation, middle of an inning. So that was like the final almost let down for the Philly crowd, who had been, as I wrote last night, doing a lot more booing than cheering throughout the week. That doesn't mean they didn't have a good time. That doesn't. Yeah, it was
not a lot to cheer for. I mean,
their hitters went 0 for 5 with 4 strikeouts. Lizardo had a scoreless inning, but we talked about Sanchez. We know what happened on the Derby night where, you know, Schwarber loses in the finals. They're booing Contreras. They're booing Walker. They're booing Mr. Met. They're booing the kids in the outfield. They're booing, you know, everybody. So it was very funny. It made the environment great, but it did suck that like not even the Duran thing because we thought that no matter the game situation, that could still be cool. And they, it just, no, it still didn't really work. But Durant finishes his outing. And then the bottom of the ninth, the American League completes one of the most dominant bullpen games in baseball history as Aroldis Chapman only gets two outs before Brian Baker is the one who gets the final out of the game, which is a fascinating pick from manager John Schneider. I have to say, Louis Varland actually threw the eighth inning. Cade Smith threw much earlier, so plenty of closers to choose from. But Brian Baker getting the last out, throwing to Adley Rutschman, his former Orioles teammate. Seems like they enjoyed that moment. And yeah, I mean, like I said, they finished up one of the most dominant pitching performances in All-Star Game history. It was the 10th shutout in All-Star Game history, but the first since 2013. They struck out 15, only allowed five base runners, and that was 11 different pitchers. So, it was a cool mix. It was a cool mix of pitchers. I mean, like, if you look at the string, if you look at the sequence from the starter Cease with the nasty stuff to, like, now we're going to Messick and Waka and Nick Martinez, who are throwing 92 and a bunch of different pitches. And then the back end was just absurd. So
sure.
Good for Brian Baker.
And,
yeah. No, definitely not. But sort I just want to give credit to them because nobody let up. There was not, and no one had a clunker.
Sure.
Even in the randomness of this game.
NL, get in the cage. There are real questions about what happens once you get to October with this type of approach. 15 strikeouts is too many. And frankly, a fitting tribute to the Phillies, a team that can cobble together this type of offensive performance at the drop of a hat. Let's finish up with Cody Bellinger, who won the MVP. Mm-hmm. Went 1-4. What was his final hitting? 1-3 with two RBIs. John Schneider said on the broadcast he got Bellinger an extra at bat to try and, like, you know, provide more reason for him to win MVP. That's not what happened. You have on here that it's 80% media broadcast voting. Did we vote? I didn't vote.
That is what it says.
We vote.
I don't know who gets to vote or if we didn't get the email. Unclear exactly how this works. I know that they open fan voting during the game, and that is a component of it. And you can imagine that there are Yankees fans that are like, yeah, I didn't get to vote. You know, all these Blue Jays fans, I got to make up for this and make sure Cody Bellinger is the All-Star Game MVP. Listen, as far as, yeah, I mean, him actually opening the game with scoring against Sanchez, that was important for winning the game, whatever. I wish it was Vargas, as I mentioned earlier, but let's talk about Bellinger, because I will say, while at first glance, I was kind of annoyed that it was Bellinger and not Vargas, I do think that if we're talking about an awesome career arc and story and people in the game, while this was not Cody Bellinger's first All-Star game, sitting in the press conference after the game and watching him with his two daughters, Cody Bellinger, we joke about him all the time because we talk about the Bellinger zone. We talked about that recently. He just turned 31 on Sunday, so his birthday is like right smack between me and you in 1995. So we kind of say this with Bryce Harper, but really Cody Bellinger, we have grown up with him, right? This dude burst into the league and is one of the best players. He has never no idea who we are, but when he arrives, we're kind of trying to figure out our way here in this baseball space. And then I loved how honest he was after the game is he basically said, yeah, you know, I make the All-Star game two of my first three seasons. I just assume I'm going to be there every year. And that's not what happened because he became terrible and injured and bounced around a couple different teams. And he has kind of rallied to become a very stable and established veteran star with the New York Yankees and finds himself in the right place at the right time in this All-Star game and delivers a hit against Christopher Sanchez to become the All-Star game MVP. So I enjoyed listening to Cody Bellinger kind of reflect on the week that was. He certainly enjoyed the Philadelphia crowd and all the boos. He's very familiar with passionate fan bases, having played for the Dodgers, for the Cubs, for the Yankees, and now gets to come to Philly with his family and enjoy being an All-Star again. So I was happy for Cody Bellinger. I thought that was pretty. He's not someone I really give a lot of thought to nowadays, to be frank, because he's just settled into this just like, yep, he's pretty good. but it's
plays
it's
a good outfield.
It's a fascinating career though. It really is, and it was cool to see him kind of get that recognition last night. So I will stand back from saying this was a travesty. As much as I love Miguel Vargas, this was cool, and I'm happy for Cody Bellinger.
Let's take a break. When we get back, America, the beautiful. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We talked about the game. Let's talk about the theater. So last night was in Philadelphia because this is the 250th anniversary of the United States of America. Not sure if you noticed, living in this country, there have been some celebrations here and there. Some good, some bad, some otherwise. But the whole point of the All-Star Game being in Philly this year was for this moment. Matt Gelb, friend of the program, came on the show last week to kind of talk about why it ended up here, how former Phillies team president David Montgomery was like very passionate about having this game in this stadium in this day. He passed away, I believe, last year before this, you know, actually happened. But that is kind of the backdrop to last night. And I think what is crucial to understand about not just that decision, but all the programming that went around the game is that MLB seems to have realized, credit to them, that the All-Star game itself can be boring. And that you need to pre-plan other memorable on-field, off-field moments in order for the All-Star game to have a cultural impact, to leave a mark, to stick in people's brains. And I thought the way that they handled things last night was pretty spectacular. I thought that the USA stuff going in would feel like rah-rah, pickup truck commercial, rock music, American flag, like shooting gun in the sky, jingoistic, more like maybe military tilted. And it didn't feel that way. It was a combination of two things that I found to be very entertaining. One was camp in regards to the Revolutionary War. We had Jennifer Hudson singing America the Beautiful pregame with a 13-piece band that was dressed up in Revolutionary War soldier outfits. Very silly. We had the introduction to the game. When players were announced in the starting lineup, they jogged to home plate where a lineup card that looked like the Declaration of Independence was waiting for them, and they penned their name like they were signing it. Let's actually talk about that for a second. Whoever at the league office thought of this bit, 10 out of 10.
Well done.
The exact perfect level of whimsy where it's like, you can't do that in a real game. Can't do that in a World Series. And I'm sure some players like rolled their eyes and were like, that's silly. But it played on TV.
Yeah. And I think that I'm sure some of them thought it was silly, but it didn't take too long. It's not like these guys don't sign things. They're signing things all week, right? So you're not really asking.
Not with a feather quill.
Well, that's the thing, right? You're not. But ultimately, if you're trying to come up with something that's different in terms of intros, this is kind of perfect because it's not. You're not asking them to do something that's so unusual, and the starters already get more of like a pause anyway. So it's not like you're adding that much more time. And now you have this incredible historical artifact, which I'm sure will be auctioned off for outrageous amounts of money. But either way, it was cool. I agree. I think that it was creative. It was cheesy, but it seemed to hit. It seemed like it looked good on TV. I feel like we noticed it in the ballpark. They showed it well on the big screen, and it was pretty cool.
Patti LaBelle crushes the anthem. That was stellar. And then we have, I'm going to just like totally butcher the specifics, men falling out of the sky. I believe they were Air Force Academy cadets parachuting into the stadium, which was very goofy to just, oh, there are people coming down from the heavens, I guess. And all the players were like, what? Cool.
All the players were all like, right. Paul Skeens, what's going on?
What are the rules to that? One of them kind of ate it, which was funny. But, and the whole crowd was like, whoa.
Here's the thing, though. There have been many versions of this at like college football games that go way worse. And it does seem like I think four of them came down and three of them like flawless landing. So I honestly, considering the stakes and how many people were watching, I think it went pretty smoothly. And I think that that was also like a cool thing that you don't get that's beyond just the flyover that you have at a lot of these games. So to add another element to it, I think was fun.
Like I've seen flyovers. I don't think I've ever seen men from the sky. That was certainly new. Let's talk about the Sandlot tribute, shall we?
Sure. Take it away.
So I did not actually spend a lot of this game up in the press box. I was down in the bowels of the stadium waiting to talk to various players. However, I was up there for this, and I'm very happy that I was, because this is one of my favorite things I've seen in a ballpark in a long time. Jordan, I rewatched it this morning when I just got home with my wife. And like I didn't tear up. I wasn't weeping like Brandon Marsh. More on that in a second. But I was like kind of struck and touched by the way they pulled this off. It was legitimately chills-ing, goosebumps, as the kids say. For those of you who didn't see it, go watch the full thing. Was it about 2 minutes too long? Yeah. Such is life. I'd rather have it 2 minutes too long than 2 minutes too short. The tribute here, and though they did not overtly say it, it was obvious, is the scene from the movie The Sandlot, in which the kids play one night game a year on the 4th of July using the fireworks as the lighting to play beneath. That is, we have joked about many times before, not how it works. Like, you still wouldn't be able to see. Adorable.
It would not be safe. It would not be safe to play under these conditions.
Yes. It is a wonderful scene. I love that. It's one of my favorite like baseball movie scenes. We're not huge baseball movie people, but like that scene is like the eternal summer, the endless childhood, baseball as this vehicle of innocence, you know, kids dreaming of what they could be, even though like for a night they're playing under the lights like the big leaguers. And then in the middle of the scene, they're so awe-inspired by the lights above them that they just stop playing. And I think there's something about that optimism that is like this inspiring, responsible Americana that I really appreciated how MLB went about it. Because like our sport at its best is a crucial, fundamental part of American society, right? And the American experiment, which is flawed in some ways and stunningly wonderful in others, like recognizing that dynamic and the limitlessness of it and the hope of America with these kids staring up at the sky and the players walking out and talking to them and the fireworks going up above, like it all just hit, man. Like it was really wonderful and was something that I'm going to remember for quite a long time.
Yeah. And I think the one part that I just want to make sure we hammer home is, you know, this was not just, okay, who happens to be in the game at this time? Hey, kids, just go stand by who's warming up. They very clearly handpicked players during this break to go out there and stand in kind of almost random positions. For example, Yordan Alvarez was just standing by third base. But
he's moving over there.
That would be, I don't think the Astros are considering that, but you know, it was not just one league too, right? You had Yordan out there. You had Bobby Witt out there. You had Mike Trout out there. You also had Freddie Freeman and Bryce Harper and Brandon Marsh and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who didn't even pitch in this game, but participated in this scene, which was really cool because they wanted to have the biggest names out there to have these moments with these kids. All of them were kind of doing slightly different things, right? Freddie was playing catch. Mike Trout was kind of helping a kid with his swing. But I do love that they kind of handpicked
Jacob Mizorowski
each guys.
Yeah. Was showing a kid pitch grips, which I loved.
I didn't even notice Miz. Okay, yeah.
Bobby Witt Jr. was going through baseball cards with one kid. Like, they... Bobby Witt Jr., for those who don't know, huge card collector. Like, they tailored this very specifically so that it would feel unique for each of those players. And then you can barely see this on the broadcast, but they show Brandon Marsh in right field, like, tears in his eyes. And I didn't see this in real time, I'll be honest. Like, I did not pick up on this right away. But after the game, I was in the clubhouse just asking players about the Sandlot thing because it – this is what they'll remember. Like, they all talked about when they're in the flow of the season, they're not thinking about all of these bigger ideas, about the trajectory of their career, about what it all means, about them as kids achieving their lifelong dreams. And this moment in the All-Star game – like, the All-Star game itself – is an opportunity to have those thoughts. And the beat within that beat really hammered it home. And when I was talking to Brandon Marsh, I was like, what do you think of it? He was like, I was crying. Like, I was weeping. Like, it was like, I was crying, bro. Like, it was nuts. And I went back and you can kind of see on the broadcast, like, his eyes are red. He's welling up. And that's great, man. You know, we talked about the World Cup, the look at what it means to him. And I thought that the Sandlot tribute last night touched that nerve of, like, they made it mean something more than just nine innings of good American League relievers on a muggy Tuesday night in July, right? And that is what we love about our sport, right? That it is more than just the game. It is more than the strikeouts and the trades and the hit by pitches and the ex-wobas, right? Like, there is a larger meaning, a larger story, a larger narrative to all this. And we get lost forest for the trees sometimes. And I thought that the league hit it out of the park last night.
Mm. Just like Miguel Vargas.
Get it?
And only Miguel Vargas. My Truth. MVP. All right. Before we take a break, I do just want to use this as an opportunity to wrap up the All-Star Week.
I just briefly want to shout out Foster Griffin.
Oh, right.
Who I wrote about last night. Foster Griffin, probably the National League's most improbable All-Star, spent the last 3 years in Japan. He was the one that was jogging in during the fireworks. He was joking afterwards that it kind of, like, messed with his prep, that he got iced, that, like, he wasn't sure when to come in. But that he just got to sit out there and watch the fireworks before he ran in, and that kind of calmed his nerves. Foster Griffin, who spent the last three July 4ths not watching fireworks, right? An ocean away in Japan. His Independence Days were just days. I asked him about it after. I was like, hey, what did you do for July 4th? He was like, July 5th, July 6th. Like, I was going to watch fireworks on the live stream back home. And, you know, I had a life to do. And so for him to kind of be back in America, first of all, after 3 years in the wilderness in Japan, kind of rebuilding his career, him getting to be the guy that jogged in that moment, this idea of dreaming, this idea of having these goals that even at the age of 29, 30, like, you're not done, right? Like, the way that Foster Griffin was, like, thinking about the sport and, oh, I can be this, is, like, similar to the kids in the freaking movie, you know? And so that I will remember for forever. Like, it meant more to me watching Foster Griffin, I think, than it did to Foster Griffin and talking about it with him after. You know, like, maybe he didn't see the whole symbolism of it all. But I certainly did, and I just thought it was super rad.
Totally agree. That said, I'm glad that they arranged for the kid to have Yamamoto there anyway, and not just have Foster Griffin. Because, you know, I think it would have been at least a touch
fella,
less memorable.
Are you Foster Griffin?
So I'm sorry if that's a disrespectful way to end that sentiment, but I'm giving MLB more credit. So, no, Foster Griffin's an amazing story. He's a deserving All-Star, and I'm glad that he got that moment. All right, let's wrap up the week in Philly before we look forward. I guess we'll do a little bit more wrapping up. As we tell you what happened with Rob Manfred and Bruce Meyer, they said words into microphones, and we're going to tell you about them, but that'll happen after the break. Before we do that, let's just kind of put a bow on All-Star Week in Philly. All of the America celebrations, all of the booing, so much booing. Philly was awesome. Philly was, it was good. I thought that the events, certainly the Derby, will be memorable because of how it ended and the format change and the Netflix of it all. You know, we were here for the draft. The draft was memorable. We know why it was certainly memorable at the very beginning, but there were
it was parts memorable.
Yes. Memorable.
Memorably for Rock Chalewski and Rob Manfred. You know,
there were certainly some interesting moments all throughout the week, all the way until Kevin Durant showed up before the All-Star game. And he got to link up with his favorite White Sox. Remember, Kevin Durant, a very famous White Sox fan. So shouts out to KD there. But before we take a break, I just think it's fitting for us to finish with a real kind of
gem of a story.
It encapsulates the Philly experience, I think, maybe kind of. Obviously, especially in this case, in this city, where you have to get a car to go to the stadium, right? This isn't exactly a walkable situation. You could take public transit, whatever, but we're taking a lot of cars around. You know, you're getting our respective rideshare services. And last night, as we both finished up our stories around 1:30 a.m. local time, and we ready to go back to our hotel and kind of just settle in and all right, we're done. We did it. We got through another All-Star week. We're so grateful, and this was so great. And earlier in the day, we had been lucky enough to kind of chop it up with Bryce Harper a little bit, who was in a great mood. We talked to him during the media availability, and we were just talking about Bryce and where he kind of fit into this whole week. And of course, we've talked about it plenty of times on this show, just what Bryce kind of means to us because of where he was at the beginning of his career, where we were when we were in high school and all these things. And we're just talking about Bryce, and it's cool to talk to him about, we were reminiscing with him about playing in Hagerstown, Maryland, a place that means a lot to us, and just thinking about that. And we're talking about Bryce, and we get into our car, and our driver, we're just talking about in the back, and
he was
driving.
Just,
yeah.
Let's just say this. This gentleman was from Philadelphia.
He sure was. And we're just kind of talking about Bryce, and then this guy just chimes in, and he told us he was our age, but certainly a very different background than us. But he was Philly. He was definitely Philly. And he just goes, Bryce Harper, that guy sucks.
We're like, excuse me? He's like, yeah, I'm a big Phillies fan. He's a B word. I hate Bryce Harper. And Jordan and I are like, okay, why? He's like, I think he's soft. And Jordan and I are like, okay, what Phillies do you like though? And he just goes, oh, Alec Boehm.
It's like, man, Boehm.
And
Trey Turner
sometimes.
Like, Nola's my guy. I'm like, all right. Sure, dude.
Jordan and I, but Harper, he sucks. And Jordan and I are in the back seat. It's like 2 a.m. We're exhausted. We can't believe what we're hearing. I mean, we're like jaws on the floor. Like, what games is this guy watching that like he can't stand? Like, he was like, Schwarber's cool. I like Schwarber. But he's like, Alec Boehm. Like, give me Boehm over Harper 8 days of the week. We were like,
hey, man.
All right.
You know what my takeaway was? This is America. Freedom of speech, freedom of fandom. You pick whoever you want, whatever whatever floats your boat, man. Like you want to appreciate Alec Boehm more than Bryce Harper if you're a Phillies fan. He was comparing, but you know, and listen, along the way he was making some points. Okay, he was supposed to lead us to the promised land, and he hasn't done it. I mean, he certainly has done his part during those postseason runs.
I had a very similar argument about Bryce Harper with a member of the media in the press box during the home run derby, where the member of the media was like, Bryce Harper didn't fulfill the promise. And I was like, yes, he did. And they were like, doesn't have a ring. And I was like, he has an OPS, I believe, of like 985 in October. Like, what do you want me to do? You know? Yeah. And then I had the similar conversation with an incoherent person in the back of an Uber. And I was just like, sports are cool. This is great. Like,
this is great.
Philadelphia as a town is so interesting because, like, the city of brotherly love thing is real. Like, the people there are super nice. It is a very welcoming place.
Yeah.
But the second you bring up, like, sports, is like, there's a psychosis where it's like, oh, no. Well, yes. For sports, we don't love. I don't do love.
Well, not only do we not do love, but we also just but at the same time, this was still an exhibition setting, and all the booing, it created a very memorable and funny environment, but it did have a playful energy, hilarious. Right? I think that and I think that was best exemplified by Jordan Walker's family, who talk about like MVPs of the week, just the whole Walker crew and them and their experience, of course, not just watching Jordan win the home run derby, but getting booed throughout, and Jordan Walker's dad just talking about his experience moving around Philly and everyone booing him, but then also being like, man, that was cool. You know, like it was a good balance, I think, at All-Star Week to have it. It did not feel necessarily hostile. It was more just like, yeah, this is what we do. You're on another team that we don't like. You're going to hear it. And that is not true in every city. It's true. It is not true in every city in this way. And that does make it – it is true in other cities, but here it certainly was part of the brand. And so on top of the fact that the fans themselves – can have strong disdain for their own players because of the standards that they hold, as we experienced on our ride home last night. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, we will look forward to the baseball season, which resumes tomorrow here in Philadelphia. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Let's go around the league. Before the pomp and circumstance of the All-Star Game, we got the womp and of Rob Manfred, MLB Commissioner, and Bruce Meyer, Interim Executive Director of the Major League Baseball Players Association, chatting with the media in a ballroom at a hotel in Philadelphia while Jordan and I ate bacon. This happens every year at All-Star and at the winter meetings, where there's like a question and answer session with both the commissioner and the executive director of the union. Now, unless you live in a hole, you know that this year's was particularly interesting, as the sport is hurtling towards a work stoppage. We were in the room. I did not get called on. My hand was up. You saw me, right? Rob Manfred.
He tried.
Call on me.
Tried.
Call on me, Rob. I had a question. Takeaways. Takeaways from hearing the two men that will shape the future of our sport explain their respective positions, again, as you nibbled on bacon.
Bacon was good.
Bacon was good.
Thank you to whoever arranged the catering. There was quite nice. Yeah, I mean, we're not obviously about to have a whole CBA discussion right now. I think that what was nice about this was, so far this season, we've been hearing these very carefully prepared statements from each side with their proposals, or sometimes it's just leaks of the details and it's not even exactly how they want it phrased. This forced both leaders of both sides to, yes, they both delivered opening statements that were clearly prepared and like they had their own talking points, but it also put them in position to actually respond as humans to the best that they could to questions from the media, asking them to explain their positions and defend their respective proposals so far. And I think that they both did a effective job of communicating that. You can disagree about, of course, the substance of what they said, but I think that it became a little bit more clear what they're going to continue to push. In the case of the league, that is, we believe it's, we've already talked about this a little bit, but it's reiterating, we're just doing what the fans want. We have done what the fans have asked for in terms of the rule changes. Look how great that's gone. And including Manfred, including like saying something along the lines of, frankly, the MLBPA was against this, but we did it and it's been great. Now we think that we should do this. And this is what the fans want. Now, the flip side of that is the PA saying, why are you telling us that our sport is broken? Why are you running ads on MLB TV telling us that we need a salary cap and that the game and that these fans have no hope? So that was, I think, a effective and probably a good way.
This game is good. PA, this is good.
Yes.
Are you not watching this? More people than ever are enjoying this. Mm-hmm. The current structure has helped to create that. Why are we rocking the boat? Was kind of the way that it was communicated. Another takeaway. So like those are the two battle lines kind of drawn in the sand, the two lines of messaging that each side took. This was also interesting for me because Bruce Meyer, this was his kind of his first foray into the spotlight as the interim executive director. Tony Clark was the previous executive director. He left in a tornado of shame after a scandal involving an inappropriate relationship with an employee that also happened to be his sister-in-law. Into that void steps Bruce. Meyer had been a character that like spoke to the media, but was not someone that was really public facing. And yesterday was like the first time he had to stand up in front of what, like 150 of us and do the dance. And I thought he did generally a good job of it. The thing that I think I appreciated the most about Bruce is that he is a very serious, straightforward individual. And he didn't try to be anything other than that. And I thought he effectively communicated yesterday some of the union's points. And in a very different style than Tony Clark. Tony Clark, who always felt like he was running for a higher office, there were positives and negatives to that. Bruce did not give off that energy. Bruce, a former courtroom lawyer, felt like he was in a courtroom in front of a jury. Just something to keep an eye on as we move forward. We're not going to get stuck in the weeds here. It was just the hilarity of this, right? Like, I just want to paint this picture. We're in the room. Meyer and like all of the union people, like the various MLBPA, like the like Kevin Slowey and Andrew Miller, like these former players and the lawyers, like they're all in the room and they're like watching, right? And then they finish. And then it's like, we're going to have a 10-minute break before Rob Manfred comes in. And like, Manfred and all of the MLB, like Dan Halem and Morgan Sword and Glenn Clapp, like they all walk in. And it's sort of like West Side Story where like they're both in the room together. And obviously these people are about to spend a lot of time in hotel conference rooms together over the winter. The only difference is we're in there eating bacon. And so like the just that like environment, just seeing it was very entertaining to me. I'm sure it'll be less entertaining come February and March when we don't have a CPA. But yesterday, it did at least make me giggle.
Couple other topics before we say goodbye, including a bit of breaking news that I'm going to throw in our Slack channel to our producers.
How?
But we will finish. We will finish on that. No, this is I'm kind of shook right now. But before we get to that, I do want to look ahead to the second half in the form of my upcoming power rankings. This one I will be playing pretty straight. Normally I do a theme. All right, let's look at the top rookies. Let's look at the top trade deadline candidates. No, I'm just going to kind of speculate on, or think about where these teams are at going into the second half. And the team by far that I am trying to figure out where I am going to put them in the second half power rankings is the Boston Red Sox, who finished, went into the break on a W-9 and are still two games under 500 at 46 and 48, but they're just a half game out of a playoff spot. They are still without Garrett Crochet and Roman Anthony. I guess now maybe the way to think about it is like, okay, they've played their way back into the position where Garrett Crochet and Roman Anthony coming back, which, again, I still am not entirely sure when that's happening. Doesn't seem like it's particularly soon. But that could be a huge deal for a team that is suddenly right in the mix. I currently have them at 16. We will see if they stay there by the time I publish. But there's not a lot of good baseball teams. And even for a team that's still under 500, they've certainly been playing as well as anybody else over the last few weeks. And I think that this is also an important one to mention, because this is a team with stuff to trade. And if they rally to the point where their playoff odds tell you, yeah, you should go for it, I don't know what buying looks like for the Boston Red Sox, but I do know that there are some players that there were probably some teams that were looking forward to trading for, like Sonny Gray, like Aroldis Chapman, maybe Wilson Contreras,
Jordan,
maybe some of Jordan. Those relievers. And now I don't think that that's going to happen.
Buying at the deadline for the Red Sox, I think that's what we call Garrett Crochet, Roman Anthony coming back. Hey, Craig Breslow, Chief Baseball Officer, you guys going to make additions at the deadline? Well, you know, it's as if we made them. Anthony and Crochet coming off the IL. Book it. Let me know.
Yeah.
Mark my words. Yeah. The Red Sox are tough to think about, especially because like we were just at All-Star for three of those games, and I need to watch them play some baseball before I give you a real sense of things. I don't know what to do with them. I'm happy that that's your job and not mine. They open up with a four-game set against the Rays, which is just like, well, no. Like, I'll have a better sense on Monday.
Yep. They got a doubleheader already on Friday due to a rainout, so a unexpected opportunity for either of those teams coming out of the break. The one other thing to kind of look forward to, the first is that you don't even have to wait until Friday for baseball to come back. Now, I think this is absurd, and I think we all could use 2 days off. However, the Mets and Phillies will be playing on Thursday night, which is just,
feels great, illegal.
This open window. I don't understand how this is allowed truly in the CBA when you play this 162 game season and barely have any off days, that you could shorten the All-Star break for anybody like this. Yes, they are going to get Friday off, but they still have to be there by Wednesday night, which, again, this is such a short break for a lot of these guys. It's certainly the ones that are actually have been at the All-Star game. So Mets at Phillies starts Thursday. The Phillies have a 9-game homestand against the Mets, Dodgers, and Yankees. And then I guess the one other thing schedule-wise to mention, since I know you'll be at the forefront of it, is this Dodgers road trip, this ridiculous East Coast Dodgers road trip that is beginning this weekend, where they go Yankees, Phillies, Mets. I know you'll be covering some number of those games. So what are you thinking about going into that series? And then we'll finish on our breaking news before we say goodbye.
I'm thinking about I need to nap. I have not given any thought at all whatsoever to the upcoming Yankees-Dodgers series. It is very interesting and feels somewhat purposeful that the league scheduled a lot of these marquee matchups coming out of the All-Star game to try and capitalize on that, some of that momentum maybe. Oh, Home Run Derby was fun. Oh, All-Star game was fun. What's on this weekend? Yankees-Dodgers? Sure, I'll watch that. That does not feel like a coincidence to me. Can you tell me the breaking news? I don't know it. I have not looked it up. I've kept myself in the dark. Please educate me.
Rintaro Sasaki is signing with the Miami Marlins, which is...
We don't have time for this right now. This is super cool and deserves like 15 minutes of conversation.
I know. And we're not...
Can we please save this for Friday?
We're not... That's Jake's nuts. Like, please shut up. Please shut up. I want to go to sleep. Please shut up. I want to go to sleep. I understand. I am floored by this decision.
Not a storyline. Yeah. There is not a storyline that is like, more, oh my God, Jordan's going to do 20 minutes on this. I need to go to bed.
I do not want to do that right now. I am with you. I'm just telling you, this is a shocking and fascinating decision that because it is reported. In fact, I'll just go pull the curtain back. The only reason I know about this is because friend of the show, Mr. Yaku Cosmopolitan, you're seeing his tweet if you're watching on YouTube. Yuri messaged me. Very simple. Wow, he actually did it. LOL. And I was like, what happened? Rintaro is staying stateside. I am so excited to watch this guy in the Midwest League. I will leave it here.
You know why? It's because he watched the Sandlot Americana Fest last night and was like, I like it here.
Unbelievable. All right. Well, we'll have more details by that hopefully on Friday. So we will talk to you all then. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Stone Rochelle for producing this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbecast. Thank you especially to Andrew Hartz. Again, Colin Brennan, Rob Thomas, but Andrew Hartz, who was with us throughout All-Star Week. Hartz
crushed
has been crushing it all week, all season, all year Hartz, since he joined us.
Superstar. Hope he has a good week.
Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed. So thank you all for listening. Thank you all for supporting us. Anyone that listens to the show that said as much, if you saw us in Philadelphia, we really appreciate it. And we will keep it rolling after we both get a nap or two. And we will talk to you all on Friday morning.